Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today, I'm so excited to introduce our absolutely amazing guest for the day, Sonia Rockville. Sonia, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Just so excited to dive into your story and share your lessons learned with the listeners. So everyone, Sonia Rockville is the principal and founder of Bedrock Real Estate Investors, a privately owned real estate company specializing in acquisitions, asset management, multifamily apartments in the United States. Sonia has an incredible corporate background and eventually transitioned to real estate. And I'm excited to hear all about that. So Sonia, why don't you take us back in time and give us a bit of background as to how you got started in your career and then your transition to real estate.
Thank you so much. So, you know, I didn't start out in real estate at all. I started out my career with an undergrad. I had majored in accounting and I decided to go and start my career in audit. And while I think that provided me great background, I knew pretty soon after being in the firm and after getting my license that I didn't want to be a partner. So I had to look for the next role, and I had a great opportunity to move to a financial services company here in New York. I stayed there for the most of my career, had great roles and met a lot of people. And, you know, while I was there, though, pretty much what was going to be towards the end of my time there, I started thinking about what it is that I wanted to do next. You know, what group or division did I see myself in? And I was actually having a hard time doing that. I was trying to envision, you know, did I want to continue to move up or what other group should I be part of? And it was getting more challenging for me as the years went by to figure out exactly where that was. But one thing that did actually spark my interest a lot, and I don't know if that's because I'm in New York and always surrounded by them, was just real estate and buildings. You know, I grew up in an apartment building and we eventually moved to a house, but there was just something about real estate that I really love. And I think the fact that it's there, it's everywhere. Real estate is really everything and it's tangible and, you know, you can transform it. So those are all things that I found like really fascinating about real estate. So I started just reading a lot of books. I took a few courses, you know, while I was still at my job. Mm-hmm. And then as it turned out, there were a lot of changes happening in the company and my whole group, including myself, we were all laid off. Uh-huh. And it was definitely a shock, and it definitely, you know, took me back. But then I thought, this is actually an opportunity because I've been looking for something else and I was having a hard time seeing myself continuing to grow. So it was, okay, this is a time to take a step back and think about what I want to do next. And I actually did think about a bunch of different options, you know, looking for another role maybe in the company or going to a competitor, because that would have been something that would also have been easier to do. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I definitely got a lot of support from my parents, my husband especially. He's just like, this is the time. The door is open, you know.
I love it.
You got to go through it. And it was a big jump, but it was great. And with that, I jumped into just reading and then just joining a bunch of organizations that really helped to support my transition.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's so much there to that story. I mean, like just thinking about, first of all, you were working at such a high level and then to be all of a sudden have your whole division laid off is just shocking. And it's disappointing, right? Because, you know, I mean, I've worked in corporate jobs before and there's an idea that that's a secure path, you know, and that
you get job security by having W-2 income, but ultimately the companies are going to do what's best for them, even if you've dedicated your lives to them. So especially larger companies. So anyways, I mean, but then you just obviously, with the support of loved ones, were able to take that and turn it into a jumping off point, you know, into a new direction that was really maybe more of what you were, where you were headed anyway. So that's just really awesome. And yeah, congrats to you for being able to make that transition.
Thanks. And, you know, I really want to highlight and love the point that you just made about security and what that really means, because you're right. Like, you know, I grew up with a generation of, you know, parents who, you know, came to this country, and it was all about, you know, getting a good job, you know, getting an education, of course, you know, getting a good job, you know, and that's going to be your job. And, you know, my parents retired in the job that they had for many years. But that has changed significantly now, and it had changed also at that time too. And what you really have to think about when you think about security is it really the company itself, or is it you? Because the other point that I love that you made is that the companies are going to do what's best for them. Mm-hmm. And so you are your own company too. Mm-hmm. And so you have to do what's best for you.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, excellent. Excellent life perspective. I also come from an immigrant family, and there was a large emphasis on getting a good job at a big company. Yeah, but I've been laid off too by, you know, a company that was doing really well, but went through a merger and, you know, things happen and it just didn't work out. So in any case, so now that you decided you wanted to get into real estate, what did that look like? Obviously you did a ton of education. How did you dip your toes in and get started? Because obviously you're at multifamily now, which is really means you're operating at a pretty high level. Where did you start?
Right. So the first thing I did was I joined my local real estate investment association because I needed to find a group of people who were like-minded. I mean, while I had support, I really wanted to be around other people who were thinking the same way, who were also interested in real estate, and also take that as an opportunity to learn. So that was the very first thing I did. And the leader of that group here in New York, you know, her first thing was, look, you have to come up with a strategy. What's your strategy going to be? It can be single family. Is it buy and hold? Is it fix and flip? Is it multifamily? And so I struggled for like a month. I remember just trying to figure out like what my strategy was going to be. And, you know, one of the things that she did was she brought in a lot of people to have them talk about what they were doing, like very successful people in different aspects of real estate. And I met, you know, a person who was going to be my first multifamily mentor, and his organization based in Long Island, which doesn't exist anymore. But for the time, it was fantastic because they were doing something that I wanted to do. Single family just didn't make sense to me, especially in New York. Mm-hmm. And then the thought of buying an apartment building in New York, just also, I just didn't know where I would get the money from to do something like that. Yeah. So they were doing something that I thought was pretty amazing. They were investing in apartment buildings outside of New York. Mm-hmm. So I joined that group and met a lot of people who were thinking the same way. And I met a joint venture partner there and many other people who ended up being investors in my deals, and I invested in their deals. And it was just an incredible experience. So that, coupled with other organizations that I joined, really helped to spur my passion towards multifamily.
Awesome. So you basically skipped over the single family part and went straight to long distance single family. Yeah, that's great. I mean, I think that's totally doable, especially today, as more and more people are talking about and investing in commercial real estate. It's something that's, even though the mindset I think is still like, oh, I should get a single family rental, when as you get into real estate, it's more and more possible to skip that phase. And yeah, so that's awesome. Cool. Let's see. So I'm curious to know kind of the arc of how your multifamily or real estate career has continued. Can you give us an overview, and then we'll go back and dive into some of the, you know, the lessons along the way?
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the things was the first acquisition that we had. Well, my very first start actually was investing as an LP in another person's deal. I thought that would help me learn about a market, learn about like how they ran the property. And then it would also give me some credibility as well on my resume that I was continuing to build as I started to talk to brokers and wanted to position myself as a real estate investor and somebody that was capable of doing a deal. It also gave me some credibility for my investors as well, because, you know, they wouldn't have known that I was working on multifamily, and I, you know, that's a whole other path. But, you know, just showing that you're actively involved and doing things purposefully to improve your path, I think is very important. Mm-hmm. So, you know, throughout that group, what I was able to do was meet another person who was also interested in the same market that I was interested in as well. And we, you know, were able to join forces and purchased our first property with friends and family, a 48 unit in Atlanta.
Nice.
And what year was that? We purchased it in 2014.
Amazing. So that was quite a while ago.
Yeah. It's been a while. And then after that, about 2 years after that, we sold that property, another 56 unit, and then moved on to 174 unit and a 96 unit, all in Georgia, three of them in Atlanta.
That's awesome. I mean, what a great time, first of all, to get started in this business. I mean, we all know the run-up from 2014 on was just amazing. So
yeah,
I mean, and it seems like there's so many lessons along the way. One question that I have is, how are you preparing for a potential downturn? I mean, you know, given that, you know, most of these acquisitions have been in the bull market, what are your thoughts on preparing for, you know, a downturn? Obviously we had a blip during COVID, but it wasn't really substantial.
Right. I mean, so on the acquisition, so at this point, we've actually sold the investments that we've had in Georgia. And so at this point, you know, I'm looking at deals very, very, very carefully, I would say, and with a different lens. So much has been learned from COVID. I think, you know, really, you know, so there was a whole thing of, like, of course, understanding your market, but really, really understanding not only your micro market, but also the property itself. Who actually lives in your building? Who is your ideal resident? Who is going to be attracted to coming and, you know, living there? And are you preparing your property to be best positioned to continue to get those people? You know, understanding the demographics and also the psychographics of the individuals that will be moving into your building, but then also understanding currently who's there and, you know, wanting to make sure that you have a good mix of residents with different types of work. You know, you don't, anything that's too concentrated, those are things that could be a challenge. Like if you had all your residents that were, you know, in retail, you know, during the pandemic, that's a real challenge. And, and of course, it's hard to prevent that when you're just purchasing the property, but it's just things to look out for, because these are like little things that you can help to think about risk and how do you mitigate it?
Yeah, for sure. A really good points when it comes to asset management of these properties that you are considering buying and have in your hands. So what are some examples of ways that what did you find as far as your tenant base, who was living at maybe one of your properties, and what did you do to make the property more amenable to them or to attract a more diverse tenant base or whatever that looked like?
Right. Well, there were a couple of things that we had to think about even more when we were facing COVID. So, well, as everybody was facing COVID. Yeah. So the first is that in terms of understanding our resident base, I mean, we already knew that we were purchasing a C-plus property. Our business plan was to go in, make some what we thought were really good improvements to the property, and then, you know, continue to attract a resident base that was going to pay for those additional upgrades and updates. We were just about to execute that plan, and then COVID happened. And as a result, we really had to take a step back. And we decided that, you know, we had cash reserves to be able to do those updates, but we thought that it would be better, because it would be much better to just hold on to those reserves and not try to push rent in a demographic that was already impacted quite a bit by COVID, and trying to get higher rents in that time didn't seem like a good strategy. So we actually had to think and restructure our strategy. We made very moderate improvements, continuing to keep the property looking good, but not the level of spend that we thought was going to happen. And instead, manage the cash flow of the property so that all of the expenses that we were doing to do those up, updates and upgrades, the minor ones would be covered by the cash flow of the property. So we didn't have to really dip into reserves. And to us, that was very important, just, you know, keeping that reserve balance and just in case. And fortunately, we didn't have to dip into it.
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-C-A-P.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
Yeah, for sure. That's really awesome that you were able to weather that storm and adapt and pivot, you know, the strategy, because so many people were just obviously shocked entirely by that situation. And yeah, it did seem like, you know, people were seizing their renovations and renting out more of the classic units were then more desirable because they came at a lower price point, you know? So what about like who you were looking to attract? Were you just looking to attract a diversity of employment, you know, basis for your tenants? What were some of the things that you were looking for during that time?
Yes, yes. So for one of our other properties, it was slightly different in that when we purchased that other property, it was at a much lower occupancy rate that had a bridge loan. We knew that we had to do the updates and changes to make that property more valuable to not only us and our investors, but to the community as well. So we had a bit of work to do. For that, we did some, you know, modifications to our plan. But overall, what we found is that, you know, we were able to also work with our property management company to identify residents who were in assistance programs. That was a smaller property and smaller unit size and actually worked very well for those individuals. So we were able to attract those people as well as people who worked in some of the local jobs in the area, people who were in school teachers or more of the administrative type roles within the school system. And so those were different individuals that we thought would be a good fit for the property and keep it stable as we were continuing to make improvements.
For sure.
Yeah,
that makes a lot of sense to just be sort of mindful about how you can create a strong tenant base overall that can continue to support the property through a variety of different times. And so that's really cool that COVID has taught us even more about, you know, how to have a robust property.
Right.
What other thoughts do you have on asset management? I know that's something that you pride yourself on. Anything else that you want to share with the listeners?
I mean, there's so much excitement when you purchase a property. Acquisitions is, you know, it's fun. It's like, you know, it's the sexy part.
It's exciting.
Of multifamily. But, you know, you can get something, but you have to be able to know how to keep it. And so I feel that the asset management piece is, and the operations is really that's the long haul, because that's, even though it, in these days, it's absolutely commendable to find deals because it's tough. You know, the margins and the cap rates are very compressed, but, you know, so acquiring is definitely a strong skill set. It's also, you want to make sure though, from an asset management perspective, that you're able to operate, you have a strategy for the property. You have a strong property management team that can help you execute that strategy, and to know enough to be able to make changes if you need to make changes to the strategy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, being able to pull all those pieces together, I think is really important. And I think, you know, having a strong property management team is essential. And as the asset manager, you're working in partnership with them, drive and to execute on the business strategy. And so I think those are the things that I think are the most important, and using the tools and of course the financials to help guide that process.
Yeah, for sure. And I want to dive into that too, but real quick, I mean, I think it's just such an important point that, you know, it's definitely the exciting and sexy part, acquisitions. It is, you know, it's like you post like just closed or whatever, and it's very exciting and everyone can kind of get really, you know, super jazzed about it. But yeah. I just love that point that like the real work is once you've acquired it and, you know, actually improving it, improving the operations, boosting the NOI. And it doesn't happen all at once on one day, right? Like it happens over time and it takes consistency and practice and continuous work and concentration and focus on improving that property. So it's the long haul.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. And okay. So, you know, you obviously have an amazing financial background. How has that helped you? Can you talk a little bit about that and how it's helped you in the real estate space?
Yeah, it's helped me a lot. So first of all, I wasn't afraid of Excel models. I know a lot of times people are like, oh no, there's a spreadsheet. But I actually love looking at the spreadsheet, looking at different scenarios, you know, so that part, you know, was very comfortable for me to move over. But then also from an asset management perspective as well, just being able to look at the financial statements and dig deep into them to figure out what's happening. You know, I sometimes really like looking at general ledgers to see like some of the real details of like, okay, like this line item is off, what's happening here. So, you know, before I bombard my property manager with a bunch of questions, I try to look first and just see, okay, what do I see going on here? Then it's like, okay, these are things that are going to come up in our weekly call. We have some questions about that. So it's the financials. I'm looking at the lease ups. How long is it taking for us to turn the property or different units, I should say. So, and then also any major projects that we have. How long is it taking? Are we on budget? And so there are multiple things that are happening at the same time, especially when you're making improvements.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I think that's such a good point. Like just actually really having a granular understanding of your financials and what is actually going on. I mean, it's so critical to any business and it's so easy to gloss over it, right? And to just look at the big picture. And that's not actually how you win in this game. Like you have to be able to get granular and be willing to get in the weeds a bit, just because that's how you catch like, oh, wait, why is this happening? And small numbers can make a big difference, right? Like, as we know, with our net operating income, it increases the value by a factor of like, let's say 20, right? And so, you know, on an annual basis. So there's so much, the devil's in the details, and it's certainly true in this. I come from an underwriting background too. So I had a similar experience, at least where I felt very comfortable. In fact, I was most comfortable looking in the spreadsheets, you know, and it's actually taken me a little bit of time to become more confident in the other parts of the business, right? Like the talking to brokers and negotiating and building relationships. Even though I am quite a gregarious person, I was definitely the most comfortable in the spreadsheet. So what was that like for you? Because it seems like you wear a lot of hats in your business.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And I had to, and that was one of the biggest transitions moving from my W-2 to working for myself, because, you know, you're in a group, you're part of the finance team or you're part of the marketing team. And like, that's the hat that you wear, but you're right. You have to wear multiple hats when you're starting out, especially when you're doing work by yourself. And even when you're beginning to build a team, you still need to wear multiple hats. So for me, definitely I gravitated towards the spreadsheet. That was the thing that was the most comfortable to me. But then I really liked talking to the brokers as well, because I like to hear the story about the deals. I loved, like, once I got the deal, okay, what, you know, understanding that, why are they selling? What's going on? And then trying to figure out, okay, how can I make this work, or can I make it work for us to take on a property like this? And then also, that's what's also really important is also speaking with your property management also at the acquisition period too, because you want, they do this every day. You want to get an understanding of how can we make this property run optimally. I remember I was looking at a deal that was going to be a really heavy lift. And I thought I had conservative projections about the timeline that it would take to do the updates. And the property manager advised me, well, especially because of COVID right now, crews have been slower, work has been slower. You're probably going to need to add another quarter or, you know, another 4 months to your projections in terms of when you're going to start ramping up, which changed things quite significantly. So, you know, it's really good to sanity check with your property manager.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. And, you know, speaking of which, so, you know, we have been talking about wearing multiple hats and also working with your property manager. So real estate is a team sport. We all, you know, have heard that before. And how have you built your team? Like, what kinds of, you know, things have helped you along the way? Have you learned, would you say, are valuable to carry forward?
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, first, if you're thinking about working with partnering with other people to joint venture or to joint venture and raise money and syndicate, you know, you really want to make sure that you have very similar values. What's important to you? You know, for us as syndicators are really important. We want to make sure that we're giving them the best experience that we can, doing updates, et cetera. Are we doing and making decisions that are going to be in their interest as well? And then also, it is important to the people that live in your buildings that, you know, someone had said, you know, apartments don't pay rent, people pay rent. So you want to make sure that, you know, you are very in tune with the community that you're in. At least that's important to me. And so those are, you know, you have to see the things that are important to you and work with people that are aligned with those same values. Mm-hmm. You know, that I think is really important. And sometimes, you know, you can have similar values, but then some goals may change. You know, you may have different short to medium to long-term goals. And then as a result, you know, partnerships change and, you know, you form new ones. But for me, it's, I've also just been working on, you know, my core group of people that I work with and, you know, joint venture partners that I really enjoy working with. And that to me, that's also a really fun part of multifamily, just the people that you get to interact with and learn from and hopefully share knowledge with.
Yeah, absolutely. I know it's true. It's such a people business. And it's one of the things that keeps it interesting. You know what I mean? Like, you're constantly meeting new people and working with new people. And, you know, it definitely keeps it interesting. Like, I think that's actually one thing that I kind of don't miss about my corporate life. Not that I didn't like my coworkers, but it was just like the same people all the time, you know? Whereas now I feel like in real estate, there's just so many, I mean, and also wearing multiple hats, you know, I'm just talking to so many different people all the time. And I think that really suits my personality anyways. Yeah. So what are some of the values that you would say you and your teammates share?
Yeah. I mean, so I would say core is just concern for our investors and doing the things that make the, you know, best sense for our investors when we make a decision to acquire a property, you know, the way we're underwriting it, just to make sure that we feel comfortable. I mean, anything can happen. Look, there was a global pandemic, but, you know, do you feel like there's, you know, a level of, for me, I call it conservatism, but, you know, is it going to be a good investment that we want to present in front of people? There are a number of deals, many, many deals that I've just passed on because I just didn't think that they were going to be what I wanted for the people who are in trust us. So, you know, that takes some hard line and it's tough because you end up turning things down. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, you do your best to pick what you think is the best. So that's really important to me. And then also very important is making sure we're providing good products for the people that live in our buildings. So, you know, clean, safe homes is fundamental. I think that's, you know, one of the, at least a primary goal is to make sure that we're presenting, you know, where people are going to be able to feel safe. We usually, you know, look at that a lot prior to acquisition and determine, you know, if there are things that we need to do to improve that. And then to make it clean, you know, both outside and at least when we rent it, we want it to be clean on the inside, but, you know, making sure that it's a good place for people to live.
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the very gratifying parts about the job as well, is just providing clean, decent, like homey communities and housing for people. So awesome. Well, thank you so much. We went into so many different topics and just really appreciate hearing from you, Sonia. Will you please take a moment to share with the listeners how they can learn more about you and anything else you want to share?
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me. And yes, you can certainly connect with me on LinkedIn. I also, my website is bedrockreinvestors.com. And I'm also on Instagram at Sonia Rockville.
Awesome. Well, I hope you all take some time to check out Sonia's company. It seems like she's, you know, just really rocking it and so excited to have you on, Sonia, and share your story with the listeners. You're totally, you know, just a total rock star and just really have so much respect and admiration. So thank you so much.
Thank you so
much. We'll see you next time.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com, for tons of free educational content to further your success.